This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
Major League Baseball players are cashing some arbitration checks today, and college baseball is 2 weeks away from the official start of preseason practice ahead of the 2019 season. Hello again, you're listening to the Extra Bases podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas of orangebloods.com, and the baseball offseason is winding down. We're not that far away from some actual practice, from some actual games. I mean, the Texas season starts a little over a month from today. I believe they have that, right? Yeah, February 15th. So basically 5 weeks from today, the Longhorns will open their season at home against Louisiana Lafayette. They're 2 weeks away from the official start of preseason practice ahead of the 2019 season. That begins on Friday the 25th, I believe. So we're getting there. We're getting there. And then if you look at some of the major league news today, it was arbitration day, as you see a lot of guys, I don't know if settled is the right word, but their arbitration cases were finalized. I saw Mookie Betts got $20 million for this upcoming season. Jacob DeGrom got something like $17 million. And you see a lot of guys getting paid today. So we'll get into some Major League Baseball stuff a little bit. But on the college side of things, since we are getting closer to the official start of practice, I think this is about the point in time where you're going to start seeing a lot of preseason top 25 lists. I don't think Baseball America has published one yet. Perfect Game USA did publish one, which is kind of odd to me because I don't know if they really have a dedicated national reporter for college baseball. I mean, it's obviously a website built off of, you know, it's kind of like the recruiting rankings for baseball. It's like the rivals.com type stuff for baseball. You know, they do all the showcase events and things like that. And we're, you know, the first one to really bring a lot of publicity and exposure to that type of stuff for baseball. So I don't know if they have a dedicated national report. I know Kendall Rogers used to be there. Now he's at D1Baseball.com. But they actually did not have the Longhorns in the preseason top 25, which is a little bit surprising to me. I think when you see more of these lists come out, and I think Collegiate Baseball Newspaper had one, and I don't mean to sound like a dick, but I really don't put much weight into their rankings when they do them. It's just, you know, kind of the way it is. I always look at D1 baseball first and then Baseball America second. And I think those two are head and shoulders above the pack, especially D1 baseball with the work those guys do. So those lists will probably come out soon. And when they do, I'm expecting Texas to be somewhere between 15 and 23, that type of position. I think that I would have them around 20, give or take a few spots. That might sound crazy to some of you Texas fans, like, you know, hey, we won the Big 12 title last year. We went to Omaha. Yeah, it was a heck of a season. And I think that alone should warrant preseason top 25 consideration when you also consider, you know, there's a bunch of guys coming back, Duke Ellis, DJ Petrinski, Mason Hibbler, David Hamilton, Blair Henley, Cam Field, Bryce Elder, Tate Shaw. You know, there's a lot of guys. You know, Ryan Reynolds will be back if Austin Todd is healthy. So there are a lot of guys that returned from that roster, Mateo Boki, that have Omaha experience, that have experience winning a lot of games in the conference. And we've seen examples over the years, even most recently as a team like Tennessee Tech, in what experience can do for a team, especially as it relates to the postseason. So I think that experience alone from an Omaha team, and you factor in the season that they had, that should warrant a top 25 consideration, which is I think that you'll see when Baseball America and D1 Baseball do their list. I think you'll see Texas in that back end range of the preseason top 25. But I think if you ask anybody that's actually in college baseball, whether it's a player, coach, whoever, they'll tell you the rankings really don't matter. I don't know how much I believe that. I think that they're always very happy if they have a number in front of their name, but you know, they know that doesn't go out and win you any games or anything like that. So I expect that that's probably where Texas will end up being ranked, is somewhere in that 20-ish type range ahead of the season. And I think that that's representative of, you know, they have some questions that they have to answer, and they still, you know, you'll see when these lists come out, you'll see a lot of teams at the top of the list, like LSU, Vanderbilt, Florida, Arkansas, though Arkansas lost a lot from last year. You'll see a lot of teams at the top of that list that have really recruited at a very high level for years now. And, you know, head coaches that have reputations for bringing in a lot of talent and programs that produce a lot of high draft picks. And the truth about Texas is it's just not there yet. It's just not. You know, that's not a knock on the current roster, but, you know, there's not a lot of slam dunk top draft guys on the Texas roster. Now, if you look at their freshman group, specifically the pitchers, there are some guys that have potential to definitely develop into that. And I think that we'll see that as the season progresses this year. But, you know, when you factor in losing Cody Clemens, I know Chase Sugar and Nolan Kingham were very up and down as starting pitchers this past season. That's a lot of experience, though. Those guys threw a lot of innings at Texas. So that's going to be something to replace, just, you know, having those guys out there on the mound. And you know, they pitched some of their best baseball at the end of the season when it mattered the most. So you factor in that, the loss of Cody Clemens, obviously that's going to be a really tough thing to replace. And then if you just look at the overall talent, it's not at that top tier of college baseball yet. The positive thing for Texas is that it's trending in that direction in a big way. You'll see it with this freshman group that's on campus. You'll see it with the incoming class next year, and then you'll see it with another incoming class after that. They've really done a great job in recruiting a lot of high-end talent. And a lot of guys that, you know, I think sometimes Texas fans will hear high-end talent and they immediately think of Josh Bell or Trey Ball or Blake Swihart. You know, Mason Thompson most recently, guys of that caliber that are probably going to be MLB picks. So that's, you know, it's kind of like it sets off the red alarm. And I think everybody immediately thinks of Josh Bell because he was the guy that literally went down to the wire and almost came to Texas, even though he was a top prospect. And so Texas fans have been burned on that so often that they say, okay, you know, it's funny. I always post a commitment. You know, when a commitment happens, I post it on orangebloods.com. One of the first replies is always, is he going to make it to campus? I mean, Texas fans are kind of conditioned to think that. And that's part of the challenge for college coaching staffs, is finding those players that are really, really, really good players in high school that also have the ability and the talent to become even better players collegiately and then move on to the professional level then. And you have to balance between those guys that, you know, the slam dunk draft guys. You know, people sometimes say, oh, you know, why is Texas wasting time recruiting those guys? Well, there's not really that much time that goes into recruiting those guys. You know, what a lot of the evaluation stuff that college coaches do, they knock out a lot of things in the summer at those big showcase events. It's not like they're, you know, they're flying all over the country or just to see one game, just to see one guy in one game or seeing a guy in 15 different games or things like that. I got news for you. You go watch Brett Beatty play at Lake Travis. You don't need five games to figure out, A, you want to offer that guy, get him on campus. You meet the kid, you meet the family, you see if it's a fit. You go from there. Hopefully, if you know, and for Texas' sake, they did lock him up. Like those guys don't take a lot of time to recruit, so it's not like there's being a lot of time being wasted on those, you know, really, really, really good high school players. They're easy evaluations because they're really, really good. And then if they end up in college, great, you've got a great player. If they don't, okay, you didn't waste hundreds of hours recruiting that guy when you could have been recruiting someone else. So I think that's a myth that some fans get in their mind is, oh, why are we wasting time on this? There's not really that much time wasted. But the biggest challenge for these college coaches is identifying that next tier below. And as I've said about Beatty before, even though I think that he's a first-round guy, and a lot of the scouts I've talked to agree, I mean, he's a first-round talent, there is a legitimate chance he's going to end up on campus just because of his background with his family and, you know, the academic side of things. And maybe he just – maybe he – you know, I think right now he'd probably be a back-end first-round guy, early second round or that compensatory round. Maybe he wants, you know, the type of top 15 pick money that will just make the decision for him. So there's a possibility he does end up on campus. But the big challenge for college coaches is to identify that next tier of guys. The guys that might be 50-50 draft college, or might be 75 college, 25 draft, or just those kinds of players that are good enough to where it is a little bit of a question whether they're going to go to college or not. And as we've seen over recent years with the development of college baseball, the way the draft goes now with the signing bonus pool that teams have to work with, they're not able to just oversign a ton of guys anymore, especially high school guys. You do get a better idea. Coaches do get a better idea, and scouts as well, who's going to go to college, who's going to go pro, how much money they want, so on and so forth. But the challenge for coaches is finding that next year player that can be a really good college player and then moves on to being a high draft pick, because those are the guys you want. And David Pearson and his staff have talked about this before. I believe, you know, one of the first interviews I ever had with David Pearson when he got hired, he discussed finding those players that want to be pros, that want to be at Texas, but also want to be pros. And he basically said, like, I don't want to go recruit a guy and sign a guy that doesn't want to be a professional baseball player. You want those guys that have that talent level and that drive and that view college baseball as, I want to have the best college career I can have, but I want to move on to professionals and be a top draft pick. Those are the types of players, if you're college coaches, that you really look for. And you look for that tier of player that is a good prospect, but not one of these slam dunk elite prospects. And if you get those types of guys on campus, and if you identify them correctly and you develop them, then you get these rosters that you're seeing at the top of these preseason rankings lists, where they're just loaded with top guys. And some of these programs have advantages that Texas does not. And I'm, you know, some of you might hear that and like, whoa, no, are you kidding me? Texas, most storied college program. Da, da, da. Yeah, it's true. Believe it or not, there are a lot of, you know, with the 11.7 scholarships, Texas, that's all it has. It has 11.7 scholarships to use. Vanderbilt, on the other hand, private school, with the way they are able to offer so many different scholarships to guys and things like that, I would say that they probably operate with like close to 22 or 23 scholarships, even though they technically only have 11.7 because they're a private school. Because they have, you know, the resources, they are able to offer different types of scholarships. You know, a guy, that's how you get a David Price on campus. That's how you get a Pedro Alvarez on campus. That's how you get a Kumar Rocker most recently, a guy that many thought would be a first-round pick. That's how you get that kind of guy on campus, is you can basically give these guys full scholarships. So there are some programs that deal with that sort of advantage, and there's other programs that are in states where they have more access to extra academic money, whereas Texas, it's so competitive. You know, take John Curtis, for example. John Curtis is one of the most intelligent young men I ever met. You know, when he came at Texas, he was actually Josh Bell's roommate when he was in summer. Think about that. If Bell would have stayed, that roommate duo both made the major leagues pretty quickly. Curtis was one of the brightest guys I've ever met. I believe he was business honors or plan two, something like that. I'd have to go look at it. I did a story one time about him coming back from thoracic outlet in Tommy John. And he talked about, you know, balancing all that stuff. Really, really bright kid. So he was in one of the toughest majors at the University of Texas, had terrific grades in high school, was all everything academically coming out of South Lake Carroll. And I believe he did not get a single academic cent from the University of Texas because it's so competitive. You know, for, you know, John Curtis might be the top, you know, 1% of his high school. You go to a place like Texas, there are a lot of people that are the top 1% of their high school. So whereas you might have a state like, you know, in Mississippi or Florida where they have those state-funded programs for, you know, I think Florida has that I forget what they call it, but it's basically like, you know, you get your college paid for or something to that extent. Like, you know, that's ways for teams to have more scholarship money for guys. But Texas, it's just 11.7. Even if you go up the road in Fort Worth, a private school in TCU, they've got more scholarship money to work with. And they've got ways to, similar to Vanderbilt, to add to the 11.7 and give some guys some more money to go there. So not only if you're Texas, you're trying to sign those top guys, you've got to figure out too how to best manage your 11.7, which makes it a little difficult sometimes to go out of state because it's expensive to be an out-of-state student at the University of Texas. It's not cheap. You got to find those ways to manage all that 11.7 and things like that. But getting back to the point is the preseason top 25 list, you're going to see a lot of programs at the top of those lists that have won a lot of games recently but really have recruited at an extremely high level for a long time. Texas is building to that. I think that you're going to see maybe as early as 2 years from this, let's say 2021, when this current freshman class will be juniors. And then they'll have two more high-level recruiting classes behind these guys. I think that that's when you'll see Texas begin starting the season where it had under Al Higuerito for most of his tenure, which is basically being a top 10 team. And a lot of that will be because I think that this Texas staff is really good at developing guys. But also, too, is that the recruiting has been at such a high level recently in terms of getting commitments and then bringing in guys, starting most recently with this class that just arrived on campus in the fall. They're going to start stockpiling a lot of talent. You know, looking at some of their guys they had in the 2020 class they got recently, I talked about it on this podcast before, guys like Tanner Witt, Carson Tucker. I mean, these are really, really talented guys, but they're also those guys that are in that tier that you've got to hit on. And that's that tier of player that might be good enough to be a high draft pick, but there's a real chance that he could end up going to college. Those are the guys that you've really got to hit on. And you just got to hope that your intel and your feel for these guys and their skill level, and you know that, okay, we've got a pretty good chance of getting this guy on campus. And also, you've got to cover your ass in certain situations too. That's why I think you look at the 2020 class for Texas, you do see a lot of infielders committed. And I think that's partially because if one of those guys goes pro out of high school, Texas has covered itself knowing that, hey, we needed to take a big infield class. Let's maybe take another one just in case one of these guys go pro. In the worst case scenario, we've got a middle infielder type of player that could profile all over the diamond, you know, and we've kind of got a surplus of talented infielders. So that's really where college programs have to hit on the recruiting aspect. Is that tier of player that is not the slam dunk pro prospect, but is just that level below. And I think you're starting to see Texas do that more and more. Again, you're listening to the Extra Bases podcast on theyak.com. I'm Justin McComas of orangebloods.com. I'm not going to lie. I can't remember if this is episode 19 or 20. I want to say it might be 19 because I think I did two basketball podcasts this week, which, I mean, the Texas basketball roller coaster provides easy opportunities for ranting on a podcast. So I think this is episode 19. And I really didn't even plan on talking about recruiting that much at all. And here we are almost 19 minutes into the podcast. And we've discussed ad nauseum recruiting in what college programs need to do in order to build those top rosters. And, you know, and I'm sure some Texas fans listening for, you know, are hearing for the first time about just it's not consistent across the board in college baseball. You know, that's not an even playing field, which might seem crazy that Texas might not have the resource. And I say resources, it's not facilities, or although Texas really needed a new indoor facility and they're getting that, it still sounds like that thing should be done in April or May of this year. So it's not really the facilities thing. It's not the coaching staff thing. It's not the stadium thing. definitely not the prestige thing. It's just that some programs are able to operate with more than 11.7 scholarships. They still technically only have 11.7, but they do have other avenues to allocate scholarship money to getting players on campus and keeping them in the program. So, yeah, when those preseason top 25 lists come out, I think Texas will probably be somewhere between probably around 15 to 23, I would guess, is where Texas will be. And I think what you're going to see is you're going to see a lot of Big 12 teams, a lot. Texas Tech for sure, TCU for sure. Baylor's got to be in there somewhere. I think you could probably see Oklahoma State in there as well. I feel like I'm forgetting somebody. Obviously, Texas. Oklahoma lost a lot, but they might sneak in there. I really think I'm definitely forgetting of somebody. Baylor, TCU, Tech, definitely Texas, Oklahoma State. No, I think that's it. West Virginia might have, the most talented starting pitcher. Besides Nicolò Dolo, but TCU's Nicolò Dolo. But West Virginia might have one of the better starting pitchers in the league. So they're going to be a threat. Oklahoma, Skip Johnson's doing a good job there. We know, for those of you that follow Texas program closely, know the job that he did in Austin, specifically in finding arms and things like that. So it wouldn't surprise me if I know people are expecting him to take a step back, losing Kyler Murray and Steele Walker. But I think that they're going to be pretty solid again. So you're going to see a lot of Big 12 teams in there, and it's getting back to – I keep looking at this schedule, and I know on a previous episode we talked about how many teams could realistically make the NCAA tournament in terms of games played, how many games Texas would play against teams on a schedule that could make the NCAA tournament. And I think the number I counted up was like 35 or 38 of their games. And that's not counting the NCAA postseason, obviously. So I think that this schedule could end up being the number one strength of schedule in the country, which when you've got some young pitchers, that's going to create some up and down results, but it's also going to give Texas a lot of opportunities for some big time wins to really boost that resume. It's winning the league, winning the Big 12 regular season always assures a team to host, but there's going to be a lot of hosts come out of the Big 12 this year, just because of the how strong the conference is. And then you get back to some of those non-conference schedules. There's going to be a lot of opportunities for people to pick up some big wins. So we will shift gears here towards Major League Baseball. Not a whole lot of things going on right now. I saw the headline about Astros Alex Bregman needing to get elbow surgery, and I was like, oh, that doesn't sound good. But really, it was to clean up some bone spurs. It sounds like he'll be ready for opening day. So it doesn't really seem like much of a concern there. As it relates to the Manny Machado, Bryce Harper sweepstakes, the Yankees today signed DJ LeMahieu, former Rockies second baseman, to a two-year, I believe it's $24 million deal. Let me look at that. Yeah, so they signed him to a two-year, $24 million deal. Now they've got a ton of infielders. They took the flyer on Tulowitzki. They've got LeMahieu now. They've got Miguel Andujar. They've got Gleyber Torres, and I know Didi Gregorius is going to be recovering from Tommy John surgery, but there's a chance, infielders, non-pitchers come back from that kind of quickly. There's a chance that he could work his way back into the mix later on this summer. It definitely is potential DH. So they got a ton of infielders, and I'm sure if Manny Machado wanted to come to New York for the If he wanted to go to New York for the right price, because I'm talking about the Yankees and money just makes me just have a weird brain fart or tongue fart or whatever. If he wants to go to the Yankees for the right price, they'll find a way to put him in there. And, maybe you trade Andujar and just clear some room. I'm sure LeMahieu could probably play multiple positions, but man, 2 years, $24 million for DJ LeMahieu, that's a good deal. That's not any sort of long-term financial commitment. It's not an extreme average annual salary. It's a safe player. He's proven that, he's a solid everyday guy. But it just goes to show you what this free agency market is right now. a guy in DJ LeMahieu who, let me pull it up, he'll be 30 this year. So he's still kind of in the back end of the prime of his career if you just look at, you know, statistically, guys at certain ages when they hit their prime. And I guess it's kind of considered like you hit it when you're like 26 and kind of stay in it till your early 30s. So he hasn't been as good of a hitter as I thought he was initially. But he's a career 298 hitter. Gets on base at a solid rate, 350. He doesn't slug. That's just really not his game. I mean, I think the most homers he hit in a season was this past year was 15 in 128 games. But it was also one of his worst offensive seasons in terms of weighted runs created because his on base went way down. It was, I think, his career low besides his second season. But you know, defensively, he's one of the better defensive players at his position. So that's, you know, he's a perennial 2F4 kind of guy, which that's a decent bang for the buck. And in signing that kind of guy, you're not signing him to a long-term deal. But I think I would think that would have to take the Yankees out of the Machado sweepstakes. And there's been some reporting going on that the White Sox and Phillies have emerged as the favorites to sign Machado. And it would kind of make sense with the timing that the Yankees would go ahead and make a move on LeMahieu. All of a sudden, they've got a surplus of infielders. I'm curious how they're going to use all those guys. If they end up trading Miguel Andujar, although that's, you know, to trade that kind of potential bat, man, that guy has some real ability as a hitter. And, you know, potentially as a middle of the lineup guy, that could really provide a lot of pop. So, you know, we'll see what they do with those infielders. But I would think that means Manny Machado is likely going to the White Sox or is going to the Phillies, which, man, think about the Phillies. They're kind of – they could potentially really capitalize on perfect timing as it relates to the free agent market. They could – I mean, while the big dogs really – many of them don't – it's not that they don't want Bryce Harper or Manny Machado. A lot of them just have those positions in a good position right now with players that are locked up, with talented players. So there's not really necessarily a huge need to go, you know, sign those guys for a 7-8 year massive $1 million deal. And the Phillies could end up being enormous winners in that they just hit free agency at the right time, which, you know I've discussed at length. The way baseball is shifting in terms of free agency, it's not the solution for teams that it was once viewed as. You know, teams are very, very tight now with the way they approach free agency. But you sign a Manny Machado or Bryce Harper, I mean, that's a big deal. Nobody should ever have a problem giving those dudes 5 or 6 years and a ton of money. Like, those are mega talents. So, you know, who knows? The Phillies or maybe the White Sox could end up just capitalizing at the perfect time with this free agency. And I still think that once those guys make their moves, then we'll start to see more action as it relates to other teams, contending type teams like the Dodgers or the Astros or the Indians, teams that have this kind of surplus of talent or prospects that they can use to really add to what is an already contending roster. The Astros have a lot of pieces that they could deal. Still wonder where JT Realmuto of the Marlins is going to end up. It seems like Miami, you would have to think they're going to trade him. And we haven't heard many rumors again about guys like Noah Syndergaard and Corey Kluber, things like that. So who knows if those flames pick back up again. But I still think everybody's just kind of waiting on this Manny Machado, Bryce Harper thing to clear out and then go for there. So with that, we will wrap up the latest edition of the Extra Bases Podcast on theyak.com. I am Dustin McComas of OrangeBloods.com. We are getting closer to the start of the college baseball season. We're 2 weeks away from Texas start to their official practices. We're 5 weeks away from the beginning of the college baseball season. Before you know it, it'll be pitchers and catchers reporting to spring training. So there is light at the end of the tunnel. There will be baseball coming up soon. And if you want to be entertained by some actual baseball, go look at some of the home runs being hit in the Venezuelan Dominican Winter Leagues right now. And just the passion and the crowds and just I'm not want to say showboating, but the passion and the energy and the charisma these guys are showing at these events, it's cool to see some of these home runs and some of these reactions in the crowds and everything else. So that can satisfy your baseball urge in the meantime. Until next time, have a good weekend. I hope you're enjoying the start to your 2019 year. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time on the Extra Bases Podcast on theact.com. I'm Dustin McComas. Thanks for listening.